Hello, and welcome to the fourth and final part of this introduction to Microsoft R Server. Now that you know how to import and manage your data, we'll finally get started with some analysis. In this session, we'll cover summary statistics, cross-tabulation, and regression modeling. First, let's briefly recap why we're interested in using MRS for analysis in the first place. Microsoft R Server extends the powerful open-source statistical programming language R in a few key ways. First, it allows R to do linear algebra on multiple threads of a machine's CPU, speeding up algorithms that depend on lots of matrix operations. Second, it allows parallel processing of data through the scalar functions, whether you're using a laptop or a 1,000-node cluster. And finally, it overcomes open-source R's requirement for all data to fit in memory by moving data to disk, probably using MRS's native XDF file format. Altogether, these improvements allow MRS to quickly process large amounts of data by taking advantage of whatever computational resources you can provide. Let's take a closer look at how computation happens in open source R. To start with, all of the data you want to work with has to fit into memory. In the last few years, the amount of memory shipping with a typical laptop or workstation has grown quite a bit, which makes big datasets more manageable for R. But as fast as memory has grown, datasets have grown even faster. Datasets measured in tens of gigabytes or terabytes are common now, and so-called big data is reaching into the petabytes and beyond. Furthermore, R requires all of its intermediate results, things like model matrices, as well as its final results to be stored in memory alongside the original data. It makes sense. You have to have enough room to work with your data as well as to store it, but it exacerbates the problem. Finally, R only uses one core at a time for computation, no matter how easy it would be to parallelize the function in question. In a time when even cell phones are multi-core, that's a major limitation. Microsoft R Server alleviates these limitations of open source R by using what we call parallel external memory algorithms, or PEMAs. First, MRS moves data to disk. Hard drives have grown bigger and cheaper in the same way that memory has, but they've done so on a totally different scale. While it's certainly feasible to have tens of gigabytes of memory in one machine, it's cheap and easy to have several terabytes of hard drive in that same machine. Even beyond that, the advent of Hadoop and similar distributed file systems means that machines can be linked together to provide genuinely huge storage capacity. MRS is designed to work well with those massive on-disk datasets. Now, once that data is stored, we've still got to process it, and ideally we'd like to do that in parallel using all the computational resources available in a given context. PEMAs are specially written so that, say, a node in a cluster with access to just one chunk of the entire dataset can compute an intermediate result for, say, a regression using just that one chunk, which can then be combined with all the other intermediate results into a final result. By allowing results to be calculated one chunk at a time, MRS can take advantage of many different computational contexts. For example, on a typical laptop with 8 to 16 gigabytes, it would be pretty easy to find a dataset that would exceed memory size. MRS would allow that laptop to work its way through huge datasets, a few chunks at a time, by leaving most of the dataset on disk. The speed is still limited by the laptop's memory and CPUs, but at least the analysis can be completed. At the other end of the spectrum, we could distribute our algorithm across an entire cluster of machines, which might be managed with Hadoop or Spark or some other cluster management system. The chunks of the dataset would be partitioned across all the nodes in the cluster. Then, each node would use its memory and CPU to process its chunks and pass intermediate results back to the head node for consolidation. This allows users to bring huge computational power to bear on even the biggest datasets, using almost exactly the same code they'd use on the laptop. So now that we know how these parallel external memory algorithms work, let's take a look at the key algorithms available in Microsoft R Server. As I mentioned in previous videos, XDF files store some essential pre-computed metadata about their contents, like the number of rows and minimum and maximum values of variables. We'll access that metadata using rxgetinfo and rxgetvarinfo. For calculating more detailed summary statistics on the fly, we've got a few choices. RxSummary provides the classic summary statistics for numeric variables, like the mean, minimum, maximum, and standard deviation, as well as the number of missing values. RxQuantile provides fast, distributed calculation of quantiles on massive datasets, This is also how you calculate a median in MRS. There are two functions for cross-tabulation: RX crosstabs, which generates the classic crosstab tables, and RX cube, which generates what we might call long or tidy tables. We'll take a closer look at the differences in just a bit. On the modeling side, we've got a variety of the most widely used algorithms. Linear regression, of course, as well as logistic regression and the whole family of generalized linear models. MRS also includes a variety of decision trees and forests, as well as the k-means and naive Bayes classifiers. All of these algorithms will run on a single machine or a distributed cluster and return the same results either way. First, let's take a look at the metadata retrieval functions. When an XDF file is created, some key statistics about the dataset are computed and stored for fast retrieval. RxGetInfo is the main function for pulling that metadata out. In this demo, we'll be looking at a dataset of all of the flights that departed from one of the three New York City metro area airports in the year 2013. I've created an XDF file that already contains this data, and that is called flights.xdf. And so if I send that to the console, you'll see it's just the file path to the location of this temporary XDF file on my machine. So to get my first look at what's going on in that XDF file, all I have to do is pass that XDF file path to the function rxgetInfo here. And so when I run that, I get a little bit of information. It tells me the path of that XDF file. It tells me how many observations are in the XDF file, how many variables. It tells me the number of blocks, which is to say the number of chunks that this particular data set is broken up into. And you can see with only about 336,000 observations, it all fits into one chunk. The usual minimum size for a chunk is about 500,000 observations. And finally, it tells me the compression type, which is pretty much always zlib, and you don't really need to worry about that. So that's a helpful starting point, especially if I know beforehand how many observations I'm supposed to have in the file and how many variables and so on. But in this case, we haven't even seen what the dataset looks like at all. So I can add an argument to my rxgetInfo command called getVarInfo. When I set getVarInfo equal to true, I also get information about each of those 18 variables. So you can see here, when I add getVarInfo, I still get the original five lines of output from rxgetInfo, but I also get one line of output for each of the variables in my dataset. And you can see that includes the year, month, and day on which the flight departed, the time at which the flight departed, whether it was delayed in departing, that's in minutes, what time it arrived, and whether it was delayed in arriving, also in minutes. I can see that I have a carrier, the tail number of the plane, the flight number of this particular flight, the origin airport and destination airport, the time that the airplane spent in the air in minutes, the distance that the airplane flew in miles, and then I have a couple of day of the week indicators. So the first one is just the original day of the week, and then the second one is the day of the week as a factor. So you can see the output I get here for a character vector is essentially nothing but the type of that variable character, but for a factor I get a little more useful information. I get the name of the variable, but also, in this case, all seven levels of that factor. So I know these are the unique values of my day of the week factor, and they're all also displayed in the order of those levels. So I can see already that weeks in this factor begin on Sunday. So I also went ahead and created factors for the origin airport. So you can see the three factors level there for Newark, which is EWR, LaGuardia, which is LGA, and JFK airports. And then for the destination airports, obviously a lot flights from New York City go to a great many places in the world. So there are 105 different unique destinations in this data set. And RxSkinInfo doesn't want to show me all of them. So it shows me sort of the first few and the last few. And then it's got sort of the dot, dot, dot ellipses in the middle to let me know that it's skipping the majority of those levels. So RxSkinInfo with GetVarInfo set to true is good for getting a peek at your data. You can see it's given me the lows and the highs and a handful of factor levels, but it doesn't give you a completely thorough overview, and that's okay. That's not really what it's for. Another option that I like to use with RxSkinInfo is the numRows option, which basically specifies how many rows of a data set you want to retrieve. So in this case, by setting numRows equal to 10, I'm asking RxSkinInfo to return the first 10 rows of the data set along with sort of its standard metadata. And those results look like this. So again, the same five lines from my original RxSkinInfo call, but then I also have sort of the classic R printout of the first 10 rows of the data set. So that's really helpful for just getting a look at what kinds of variables you have, some of the values in each of those variables, and so on. And you can also, I should note, use all three of those options together. I can add GetVarInfo and numRows at the same time and get, you know, the original five, the variable info, and the first 10 rows. Now, as I mentioned, there's a little shortcut function if you just want to look at the variable information. There's a function called RxGetVarInfo, which gives you just the variable output of RxGetInfo, which is often handy. And then there's also a little helper function called RxGetVarNames if you just want to get a character vector of the names of the variables in an XDF file. You can run that function to get those names and then use that in whatever sort of programming you're interested in using them for. To get summary statistics for numeric variables beyond just the minimum and maximum, we'll typically be using RxSummary. RxSummary provides statistics like the mean, standard deviation, as well as the minimum and maximum, and also the number of missing values within a variable. RxSummary can summarize any number of numeric variables at once, and even provide group-wise summaries of those variables. You can control which variables RxSummary evaluates using R's formula syntax. Let's take a look at some examples. If you know R, this should look both familiar and a little strange. The formula syntax depends on the tilde symbol. On the left-hand side, we'd typically put the dependent variable, and on the right-hand side, we'd typically put our predictors. In RxSummary, we'll usually leave the left-hand side blank and put the variables we want to summarize on the right, as you see here. In this case, I'm summarizing just the variable arrival delay from my flights data set. To summarize more than one variable at a time, we just add them to the right-hand side of the formula, separating them with plus signs. Here I've added a departure delay to the right-hand side, separated from arrival delay with a plus. Now, when we want to do a group-wise summary, we move the variable we want to summarize to the left-hand side and put the grouping variable, which always has to be a factor, on the right. This says something like, I want to summarize arrival delay for each of the days of the week. The one common statistic that RxSummary doesn't provide is quantiles, but you can get those using the RxQuantile function. Unlike RxSummary, RxQuantile takes only one variable at a time. Let's take a look at RxSummary and RxQuantile in action. So here, I'll just walk through my RxSummary examples from the slides. You can see the output from just summarizing arrival delay is a little bit of boilerplate, basically. It tells me the number of rows read and processed. It tells me the formula that I used to create these results, and gives me the file path to the XDF file from which it came. So that's for interactive use, those things aren't terribly useful, but if you save this RxSummary output as an object and then later needed to refer to it, it would be helpful to have access to these sorts of metadata details. But the main part of RX summary's output is this little table here that tells me the name of the variable, its mean, standard deviation, minimum, maximum, how many valid observations there were, and how many missing observations there were. Now, the output stays pretty much the same when we add a second variable, but you can see that now, instead of just arrival delay, I now have two variables in my output table, both arrival delay and departure delay. And this sort of tabular output means that it's pretty straightforward to extract these results from RX summary and use them programmatically for other purposes, whether that's creating plots or passing these summary statistics into RX data step transformations, as we've seen in previous videos. Now, it's worth noting that RX summary can work for factors too. It doesn't have very in-depth functionality, but if we add a factor, in this case days of week, to the output, you can see I still get my table with the two delay variables. And then I also get this little summary of my days of the week variable, which tells me how many categories there are, how many valid observations there are, and just gives me a count for each level of those variables. So we'll see in just a little bit a more in-depth way to do cross-tabulations of factor variables in MRS, but this is very useful for getting a quick look at a data set and seeing just some simple things like the fact that there are fewer flights on Saturdays and Sundays than during the rest of the week, which just as a sanity check for that variable seems like a good indicator. Now, we can also do group-wise summaries. You can see here I've put arrival delay on the left-hand side of my formula and day of the week as a factor on the right-hand side. And when I run that, again, I get my table of means and standard deviations. But instead of having an entry for different variables, now I have an entry for every day of the week. And I can see that the average delay is higher on Mondays than it is on a Sunday, and that it's highest of all on Thursdays, with 11, almost 12 minutes of delay. RX quantile only works for one variable at a time, which you can name in quotes here. So I'm quoting the arrival delay variable name, since it's not in a formula. And if I run that, you can see by default, RX quantile gives me the 0, 25, 50, 75th, and 100th quantiles of the arrival delay variable. Now, for most people's purposes, that's most of what you'll need. But if you are trying to estimate some other quantiles, for example, if you wanted a 95% interval in quantiles, you can also specify your own probabilities using the probs argument to quantile. So here I'm specifying that I want everything from the 2.5 quantile to the 97.5 quantile. If I run that, you can see the same kind of output just with my own custom quantiles. Now, as we've seen, RX summary can do some basic tabulation of factor variables, but to do cross-tabulation, you'll want to turn to the functions RxCrossTabs and RxCube. They both use the same syntax, but format the results differently. RxCrossTabs produces the classic crosstab matrices, while RxCube generates frequency tables that we might call long or tidy. These two functions also use the formula syntax, but they use the colon to separate variables instead of the plus signs that we used in RX summary. That's because a colon in R's formula syntax indicates that we want to know about the relationship between two variables, in this case expressed as a frequency table. Let's take a look at some examples. To begin with, let's use RX crosstabs and RX cube to look at just one variable, the origin airport for all of our flights. So you can see I'm using the formula syntax here. I've got my tilde, and then on the right-hand side, I have my origin factor variable. Just a reminder, RX crosstabs and RX cube only work with factors. They won't work with character variables or numeric variables. So if I run RX crosstabs, you can see I get some of the same metadata that I got with RX summary, But then down here, I have the names of my three airports and a count of all the flights that originated at each one of them. And that's RX crosstabs. And if I run RX cube, I get pretty similar results. There are just some slight differences here. You can see the variable name and the column name counts are here in RX cube. I've got row numbers. Usually in R, when you see column names and row numbers, that's a good sign that what you're dealing with is a data frame. And that's close to true here. And I'll show you how to get a data frame out of RX cube in just a moment. Now, if we add a second variable, you can see again I'm adding adding another variable using the colon. So I've added destination airport to my origin, separated by the colon. And when I run that, you can see because there are a lot of destination airports, I get a pretty long table. But you can see across the top, I have each of my three origin airports. And then down the left-hand side here, I have each of my destination airports. And then in the resulting table, I have the counts of all the flights that went between those two airports. And let's take a look at the same output in RX cube. And you can see, it again looks pretty similar. There is one slight difference though. In the previous output from RX crosstabs, each of my columns was one of the origin airports. But now I have two columns that are related to the airports. One is the destination airport, and the other is the origin airport. So you can see here at the top of the output, I have all of the flights that originated in Newark. And then in the next column over, I have all of the destinations. And finally, at the end, I have all of the counts. So with relatively few unique levels across the columns, the outputs look pretty similar. But if I flip these around and had destination as the columns, you'd see I'd have a huge number of columns and just relatively few rows. And this is where it starts to become evident that RX cube's output is perhaps a little more manageable in higher dimensions than that of RX crosstabs. But just to really drive that point home, let's add one more variable to these cross tabulations and see what it looks like when we have three dimensions of cross tabulations. So I'm going to add day of week, and so you can see it's separated from destination and origin by yet another colon. I'll go ahead and run that. And so to begin with, things look pretty normal. This looks just like the table I had before, but now there's this separator. And you can see that this is a separate table for just Saturdays. And above it is a separate table for Friday, another one for Thursday above that, and on and on. So this is relatively easy to read, but it's tough to get data like this into another function that you might want to use for plotting or some other purpose. And if we look at the same results in RX cube, you can see that what's happened is instead of adding more and more tables, RX cube adds more and more columns. And then I have the unique combinations of every origin, destination, and day of week, which means it's quite a long table. It actually it hasn't all printed to my console here. But by just adding a new column every time, RX cube maintains a nice data frame that's really easy to pass on into other functions. So there's one catch to using that data frame in other functions, which is that you just have to set the return data frame argument in RX cube to true. And so if I do that and run my RX cube, so here's my RX cube code, pretty much just as it was before, but now I'm going to assign it to an R object here in my local workspace. So scale R will distribute the request to do this cross tabulation to all of my nodes, collect results from each of those, compile them into a data frame here in my local workspace, and I'm going to save that data frame and make it available in my workspace for use in plotting functions and things like that by assigning it to something that I'm going to call cube results. So throughout much of this session, we haven't been assigning our results to anything. We've just been creating XDF files and modifying XDF files in place. But now that we're getting into analysis, we'll start creating our objects again. So I'll run this RX cube result, and you can see now that I have this data frame that persists. It still has a little bit of printout that looks like RX cube, but it is a data frame that we can use normally. So I can use a function like head on it. If I use head on a data frame, it gives me the first six rows. And I could also use this cube results object to create a plot. So here I'll just do a simple ggplot just to show the number of flights originating in at each airport as lines across time for each day of the week. So you can see pretty clearly here the number of flights is more or less constant throughout the business days, but then drops significantly on Saturday, picks up a little bit more on Sunday. Now that we've seen how to summarize our data, it's time to start thinking about building a model. In MRS, the modeling workflow looks something like this. First, we import data to an XDF file with RX import. There are a number of ways to use MRS without building an XDF file in the first place, but those are a bit beyond the scope of this tutorial. Next, we have to learn what our imported data looks like. RxGetInfo is a great way to start, followed by RxSummary and RxCube to dig deeper into the variables and their relationships. Inevitably, we'll find something that needs cleaning up when we do that, variables to be created or transformed, and we can do those things with RxDataStep and RxFactors. Once the dataset is ready, we start building models. In this tutorial, we'll just look at RxLinMod, but a whole suite of models is available. Most of the MRS models use the formula syntax in the same way that their open source R counterparts do. The variable we want to predict goes on the left, and its predictors go on the right. Here are some simple examples of a linear regression using RxLinMod, a logistic regression using RxLogit, and a naive Bayes classifier using RxNaive Bayes. You can see the formulas are pretty similar across all these different model types, and if you're familiar with R, you know that these are pretty typical model formulas for R as well. It's all pretty straightforward, so let's take a look at a live example. Let's build an extremely simple model of arrival delay for our flights that's only predicting arrival delay based on which airport the flight originated at. So here I've got arrival delay on the left and the origin factor on the right-hand side. So I'll go ahead and run that, and you can see I'm also assigning the results of RxLinMod to an R object here in my workspace. I'm not saving it to an XDF file or anything like that. It's become an object here in my local workspace. Now, once I have this, I can use some of the familiar open source R tools for analyzing the results of this model. For example, to get the most informative view of its results, I can use the summary function, which you can see is pretty similar to the results for the open source RLM function. I've got my table of coefficients, the estimates, standard errors, p-values, and so on. I have some basic model summary statistics down here, my adjusted R-squares, F-statistics, things like that. And you can see here that just as with open source R, one of the levels of the factors is dropped to serve as the reference level for the other two. The difference here is that RxLinMod actually explicitly shows you which one was dropped, and it's the last of the factor levels as opposed to the first in open source R. So there's a little bit of information here in the origin as a predictor. I can see that flights departing from Newark are on average about 3.5 minutes later than flights originating from the other two airports, and that does appear to have some statistical significance. Now, some of these base R functions will work on my RxLinMod object. I've just shown summary, and for example, the coef function, which extracts the coefficients from a model, works just fine. But a lot of the methods from base R won't work. For example, ANOVA doesn't know what to do with an RxLinMod object, and it pretty much tells you that right here in the error message. No applicable method for ANOVA applied to an object of class RxLinMod. So a simple way that you can check to see if a function that you're interested in will work for RxLinMod or not is to use the methods function. So you can use methods on summary, for example. Now, basically, what you see here is a list of all of the objects that have a special summary method written for them. So that includes a lot of things that we're familiar with. There's LM from Open Source R, GLM, factors. And we can see here in the R section, there are methods for RxCube, RxLinMod, and for XDF files. So as we've seen, that works. Now let's take a look at coef. And you can see coef has a much shorter list. It works on a few. Now you can see coef has a much shorter list, and so it's easy to pick out the RxLinMod method there. And if we take a look at ANOVA, we can see it's also got a pretty short list, pretty similar to coef, but one thing that we don't see here is RxLinMod or any of the other scalar functions. So we know that ANOVA won't work on RxLinMod, so we'll have to figure out some other method if we want to use an ANOVA on it. Now, because my model is an R object, I can also save that model for later use. And so this is something that you would typically do in Open Source R to save a model for later. Use the save function and name an RData file where you'd like to store the object. I'm just going to call mine model.rdata. So I can save it. And then, if I restarted my session or if I remove the object or whatever, here I'll just remove mod 1 from my session. I can load it right back from that RData file. And so the advantage of this is that if you need to create a model and then have it available for many R sessions, let's say a bunch of R sessions that you're using to send predictions over an API, or R sessions that you and your colleagues are all using simultaneously, being able to load the model from this RData file makes it quick to get these results without needing to regenerate the model or without even needing to load up the data that we use to create the model. Now that we've built the regression, we can use it to generate fitted values, residuals, and predictions on new data. Because MRS models are stored in memory rather than on disk, they have to be designed in a way that limits their overall size. A linear model object by itself isn't very big, but when you start adding things like fitted values and residuals, they can become quite large. To get around that, MRS models don't automatically compute the fitted values and residuals in the same way that many open source R models do, but we can use RxPredict to generate those fitted values, residuals, as well as predictions, and then add those to our XDF file. Now, since fitted values are essentially predictions made on the original dataset, all I have to do to get them is use RxPredict to apply mod 1 to my original dataset, Flights XDF. And then to specify that I want to write those results out to Flights XDF as well, I just set outdata equals Flights XDF. So I can run that code, it works, and then check the results using RxDataStep to just peek at the first 10 rows of the dataset. And you can see here that I now have a variable called arrivalDelay_pred that assigns the fitted values to all of the flights in my dataset based on their origin airport. Now, if I want to create predictions on a new dataset, all I have to do is pass that new dataset in place of Flights XDF. In this case, because my predictor is so simple and just has 3 levels, really there can only be 3 predicted values. So if I create a new dataset like this one that just has a column called origin_F and is a factor that has those 3 levels, I can calculate essentially all the predictions that could ever come out of this absurdly simple little model. And then to create those predictions, now I'm using a data frame here in memory because it's such a small example, but this could also write out to an XDF. I'm going to take rxpredict to apply model 1 to my new data, and then I want to write the results out to new data as well. And since this is a data frame, I also just have to assign it to overwrite the existing object, otherwise it would just print the results to the console and then disappear. So I'm going to run that code, and then we can take a look at the results. And you can see for each origin, its predicted value appears right there. These are the only three results, but if I had a bigger data set of flights, I would get a custom prediction for each of those. RxPredict has other options too. You can compute residuals, standard errors, confidence intervals, and prediction intervals, all using some simple functions available within RxPredict. And for binary classifiers, you might also want to take a look at the function RxRocCurve, which compares the actual values to one or more predictions generated by RxPredict. That's it for this introduction to Microsoft R Server. Be sure to check out the exercises that accompany this video so you can try your hand at predictive modeling with MRS. Thanks so much for your attention, and see you next time.